Brady Forrest is one of the organizers of the WEAR 2.0 conference coming up June 13th and 14th in San Jose. WEAR 2.0 is all about location technology, how it's opening up a whole new world of possibilities, allowing us to do more with everything from phones to search to games. We'll be showcasing some excellent new projects at the WEAR 2.0 conference. Today, Brady talks to Greg Treffrey and Kevin Slavin, working on creative solutions for mobile social games.
Hi, Greg. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, how's it going?
Tell me what you guys are working on right now.
Greg? My main project right now is organizing the Come Out and Play Festival, which is going to be a big social mobile games conference. The idea being that to get a lot of people together to play some new games, get people to make new games, and really force designers to make new stuff, and to get the, you know, a community that really wants to play games really involved and get them a chance to come out and play, I guess.
And it's Kevin. Well, one thing is that, of course, we're working with and for Greg on the Come Out and Play Festival. But beyond that, in terms of commercial projects, one that's taking up almost all of our time at the moment is a project for Nokia in Hong Kong, which will be through the entire city there. And then we're working on a couple of other projects in the United States for the Van Allen Institute in September for an exhibition called The Good Life, where there'll be a location-based game called Crossroads that we'll be building for September. There's a bunch of other sort of associated projects for A&E and a couple of other clients, but those are sort of the ones that are taking up all of our time.
Just tell me the basic elements of a location-based game.
Well, I mean, in my mind, it has it makes interesting use of a public space. It's not so much located in your home, but like outside. A lot of the games I've been particularly interested in, mobile interested in, especially for the festival, are things that take place out on the street, that sort of reimagine the world around them, and whether they use technology or not, they often do, and that's often what makes them kind of very appealing. But they're hard things to define.
And why is that?
Well, games in general are kind of hard to define, but then video games are like something like an alternate reality game where you're playing it on the internet versus ones where you're out in public versus, going to the park and playing basketball. And in my mind, it has a lot to do with the boundaries of it and sort of like, when you play basketball, you're sort of on the court, but when you play these other games, oftentimes they become much more pervasive and integrate like the world around them in a different way. And often, just even the use of everyday devices like cell phones, something that you didn't think of as a game tool before.
Right, I think one of the things that's happened in what's really an emerging field is that location-based has come to be equated with geographic information, and that's not necessarily the full capabilities that we can get to. And the really interesting things that are happening in terms of location-based games are games that go beyond simply using latitudinal and longitudinal information, and start to use things like the time of day, start to use things like sunlight, or start to use things like the lens of the camera, which can recognize where it is, that maybe there's something in particular that you're seeing right where you are. It's not necessarily that you happen to be at this point on the earth. It's that you happen to be at the right place at the right time, and that there's a lot of ways to determine that. And, we're sort of interested in how to unlock the capabilities within phones, for example, that they can understand what they hear, that they can understand what they see, that they can communicate with everybody we know, and to really start to bring those types of information. It's not necessarily latitude and longitude. What's important is, are our friends nearby?
Which of these alternate methods work best?
Yeah, I don't think there's any, one single best system, any more than there's any one, best, style of game or genre of game. But I think the thing to really look for, the thing that's really going to be the most powerful, are going to be the games that really emphasize the social elements, things that are based on the proximity of other people who are playing, for example. So things like Bot Fighters that came out of It's Alive in Sweden, or things like Mogi Mogi that came out of a collaboration between some French researchers and Japanese, that the integration of other people and all the ways that we can do that, that's really going to make the most compelling game experiences as they do in real life.
Yeah, I mean, oftentimes with big games, they get so spread out that you lose contact with other people, and it makes it a lot less interesting, I find.
And what are some of the differences between markets, like in Asia?
Well, the biggest difference is that if you look at Japan and Korea specifically, there's a tremendous push towards, real locatability in mobile phones. within Japan, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but it's somewhere around 50% of all current phones are GPS, like really either fully GPS or a GPS. And I think that's mandated at 100% by like 2007, which is like, you know, whatever, 6 months away. That allows a totally different type of experience, right? Because otherwise you're bound to, you know, TDOA locatability, you're bound to like cell ID, which is really pretty limiting in terms of what you can do. Basically, GPS unlocks, you know, a whole set of things that you can do that are really, really powerful. That said, I think there are some imaginative ways to use TDOA and cell ID. If you look at the stuff that the Blister guys have done, the Canadian company Blister have done, they did Swordfish and Torpedo Bay, and that you don't necessarily need GPS to do some really interesting stuff. But I think that the race is really going to be run in Japan and Korea in terms of proper location-based games on the handset.
So who pays for these games?
That's the question. I mean, if you don't have GPS or AGPS, then you have a problem on the revenue side, which is that most countries, including the United States, you're going to have to pay on every location lookup, right? And so now you have like a real game design problem, which is that you're disincentivized to play actively. The more times you basically ping for a location, the more you're going to have to pay to play the game. You know, you're never going to have a payment model for that that's really going to be that enticing for people. Once you move to a GPS or a GPS model, then the people who are going to play these games are the people who play games. You know, asking who plays games is like asking who goes to the movies. The answer is always everyone, but then different people go to different movies, and different people will play different games. The challenge with big games and location-based games is to make games that use physical information and use location, but can still be played out in a casual way. And then, you know, will people pay a couple bucks a month? It seems like it. You know, we'll see.
So who's paying for the games right now?
Right now, I mean, you know, with Mogi Mogi and some of the games in Singapore, et cetera, I don't know what the demographics breakdown is.
Because I was under the impression that it's mostly companies. That's kind of being done just as promotion for hardware.
Yeah. A lot of them have been marketing games and that sort of thing.
Or
commission sort of pieces in a sense where somebody else kind of money in it. And that's oftentimes why a lot of them get kind of played once, which, you know, doesn't allow for a lot of, like, you know, interesting games to kind of be made, like, in a way.
The basis of how we've been running for over a year has been basically, you know, for their use, you know, as marketing vehicle. You know, if you go to any ad agency, what they're doing is they're looking for something, anything to do besides a 30-second ad, and they're looking for anything that can actually engage people and broadcast out in public space. And these have been effective in that. Some of the clients that have done that are, you know, are tech companies, you know, are the Nokias and the Quests and the Microsofts of the world. But then, you know, I think what we're seeing is that, you know, a lot of very different kinds of companies have recognized that this is an emerging and really, really valuable form of entertainment. So you see companies like Palladium Shoes is running a big game based off geocaching. Jeep basically, you know, sponsored a variation of geocaching for a long time. Hasbro did Monopoly Live in London. NWA did something, Northwest Airlines did something in Tokyo. It's very, very different types of companies are making these happen. Within that, some are going to be good, some are going to be bad, just as sure as, you know, there's a couple of good ads on TV and a lot of them are terrible. It really comes down to whether they're going to take the time to really make game design one of the strong elements of the game, you know, that it's not just an afterthought.
How do you think your games are changing the way people think about location on their phones?
Well, I think, you know, one of the goals with big games in general is to get people to, you know, sort of have a different set of criteria for the space that they're in. The example we always use is that, like, you know, someone sits down and decides that this is a one-way street or, you know, it's alternate side of street parking or this and that, and there's all these criteria that are applied to how the street's going to be used, and then you get some kid with a skateboard, and all they care about is whether it's an incline, decline, bumpy, or smooth. And that's a totally different set of criteria, and they use location completely differently than it was intended. And what we're trying to do is basically give totally different sets of criteria. And if the phone is understood as a tool to change what the world around you can do, then that's really, really powerful. It's not just a thing of communicating with other people. It's actually a question of changing how you use the city itself.
Yeah, and we found that with some of the games we've made, you can reappropriate not only the phone, but like actual locations, and people kind of wind up viewing them entirely differently. We made, one of the things we make use payphones, and it kind of totally changes the view, what your view of this piece of mildly antiquated technology is, but it kind of reappropriates as a new game piece, and, you know, kind of wind up looking at them differently every time you see them after that. And games, you know, have a really great way of getting in people's heads and really affecting the way they think.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks to you.
Thanks.
If you're interested in learning more about how Greg Treffry and Kevin Slavin and other smart people are pushing the boundaries of location-aware technologies, visit the Ware 2.0 conference website at conference.oreilly.slash.ware. The conference is happening June 13th and 14th in San Jose. We hope to see you there.